Welcome to the World Trademark Review Podcast, turning trademark law into business sense.
I'm Trevor Little, editor of World Trademark Review, and welcome to our first podcast of 2016. January is traditionally a month when many trademark counsel, if they've actually managed to have a December break, consider the workloads that lay ahead over the next 12 months. Then they roll up their sleeves and they get on with the job at hand. But each year it's also the time when one particular counsel prepares to take on a significant additional workload, namely that related to the presidency of the International Trademark Association. This year, Ronald Von Tail, who is the Intellectual Property Trademarks Director at JT International in Geneva, has stepped up into this leadership role. While he's got a lot on his plate right now, he took some time out to speak to us about his vision for the presidency, the evolution of Inter, and the key issues facing the trademark industry. So let's hear what he had to say. So Ronald, thanks for joining us today. And I'd like to start with a little discussion about sort of, you know, your role at the INTA going forward. You become president at quite an interesting time for the association, with new committee structures bedding in as of effectively this month. I just want to get a sense of how you feel this will impact your role as president.
At the moment, what I can foresee will deal with the impact of the new committee structure is that we'll see a lot of policy making from some of the new committees, such as the designs committees. Inter doesn't really have a very clear or specific policy on designs, and I'm expecting that to come out of that committee, and also potentially some of the other new committees that have been established. And also, in the previous structure, or very recently, there was already a rapid response team, which handles basically the various versions of the EU trademark package, and that's now been more formalized. So the CEO and the president can create rapid response teams for very specific topics that come up, and I can imagine that one of those might come up in the coming year.
Excellent. I'd imagine it would be the case. There certainly was a lot sort of coming up when you least expect it. I think having that kind of fluidity is a very valuable thing. Another activity that you sort of previously mentioned is a specific INTA task force that's going to determine how best the association can support in-house trademark practitioners, those that are working for existing and for prospective INTA member organizations. So I just want to get a sense of the motivation behind the creation of this particular task force at this moment in time.
I think my motivation, well, the moment in time is, of course, the fact that as a president, you have the opportunity to create a task force. So this was the opportunity for me to consider a task force. It's not a given. And we were in the third year of the strategic plan, and I looked at sort of the directions in the plan and which had been looked at the previous task forces already properly addressed by existing committees. And I thought that specifically on membership satisfaction, there was an opportunity there to dive a little bit deeper. There's already in the strategic plan, there is something on membership satisfaction. And when I was looking or thinking at the topic, I was thinking specifically about regular members, so the in-house professionals. And the obvious reason why is that I've been an in-house professional all my life. And I've seen, let's say, various trends over these years with, parts of work being outsourced. I have been in a role where I was not replaced myself, where I left. I understand that many people are struggling to be able to attend Inter meetings, for instance. And I wanted to understand if that was a trend. So it sort of all came together when we started discussing options for the task force. And this was one that was so close to my heart that this was the one that we started to work on.
Interesting. And the aim of the task force is to determine how the association can kind of give this support. And I wonder how that determination is actually going to be approached and how this will then be used to inform association activities.
Yeah. Well, the task force has, it has been created and they have had several calls, but it's difficult at this stage to really foresee how it will really be approached. But from what I'm seeing now is that we've asked them to come up with a final report in the board meeting at leadership in November. And what the task force is really going to do is to focus on two specific aspects. So effect finding around those the topics of what is the current position of in-house counsels, what are the opportunities to further their careers, are there any threats or along the road for them to lose credibility or influence within a company. And following that fact finding, they'll come up with recommendations based on those findings, and then the board will really be deciding which recommendations to implement.
And at the heart of this is the sort of the premise, I guess, that for some in-house practitioners, it's difficult to find maybe the time and the resources to be as involved in Inter as they would like to be. I just like to get a sense of maybe your involvement with Inter, like how long you've been involved, how it first came about, and really how supportive the companies that you've worked for have been about the time that you've had to engage, you know, the time you've had to dedicate to this sort of role.
Well, to be honest, I think I've been lucky. Perhaps my employers have always been very supportive. I first became active in INTA when I was working for Unilever, I was really, I was given the opportunity to attend the annual meeting, but also to join committee and be active in committees. So I can only say that it's been very supportive in terms of the time investment. I mean, you're doing this next to your day job, so it's coming out of my own free time, so to speak, and that's something that I gladly do because I know in what sense I benefit from my participation in INTA.
So for those of the council that are maybe trying to make the case to their companies about why they should be more involved and be able to dedicate that time, based on your experience having had that sort of exposure to the INTA environment, I mean, what are the key messages that you feel that sort of corporates can make to their senior management about the benefits of being active in terms of their participation?
Yeah, well, INTA has some information on that already on the website today, but what I'm really hoping is that the task force would also come up with a set of recommendations in around that area for improvement of those messages. But at the moment, I think what is really the key messages are is that, you know, by participating in INTA, by being on the committee, you are really at the forefront of efforts to make changes when dealing with the trademarks, so the most valuable asset of your company. You can join other organizations and you can collectively influence the protection and the development and the respect for trademarks and for brands and also for the related IP. And also an aspect that I think is important for people to highlight is that through your participation in INTA, you can also enhance your company's visibility or public reputation as an organization that values brands and also, therefore, in the end, values the importance to consumers of those brands.
And you mentioned change and managing change, and I guess that's also a theme at the moment for the INTA itself. I mean, even in this, having come out of 2015, where we had the first leadership meeting outside North America, sort of heading down to Panama. We recently also had an annual meeting in Hong Kong, which was sort of the first time that's sort of gone to Asia. And in the coming year, that there's sort of quite a landmark conference in Africa, and also the association is looking to open its Asia Pacific office in Singapore. So I guess there's been a real acceleration in terms of change for the association, particularly with a view to its internationalization efforts over the past few years. I just wanted to get a sense from you, having been on the Inter Board of Directors for 5 years now, if you've observed any observations about the change of culture in the association and how that is being managed.
Yeah, it's. There's not one answer to that question, but I think what to me comes up as something that has changed is transparency. From the committee application process, for instance, has been changed. The whole process has been sort of drafted out now to allow people the opportunity to sort of read how the process is going and explaining how. And transparently setting out what the steps are and the requirements are for you to join and then be involved in a committee. And I think that's definitely something that is a change. The internationalization obviously is as well a change. I mean, there is now a clear direction to take the annual meeting and also the leadership meeting at specific intervals outside of the US and Hong Kong, that you mentioned, and Panama, you also mentioned, have proven that these events can be successful also when they're held outside of the US. I think those are the two key ones that to me sort of jump out.
And in a few minutes, we'll sort of touch on some of the issues that are being discussed at these events and some of the challenges facing the industry. But I guess, you know, what are the system? It must be quite exciting, A, to be in a leadership role during this kind of change. But I guess also you've got a support network there. And I just want to get a sense of whether you've managed to speak to past presidents about the job you have at hand and whether they could give you any tips about, you know, how to approach that.
Well, yes, we have had those discussions or those talks or in between sessions or whenever we met. I mean, first of all, it's mostly the overriding drive, I'd say, is really to support each other because, you know, as a past president, you know how much work it is to be the president of INTJ for a full year. So it's very much, you know, providing a support network almost in saying, you know, whenever you have an issue, whenever you want to discuss something, just reach out. In terms of tips, it's really, you know, I think the most practical or real tip that I've had is just to, you know, to enjoy the experience, because what I've heard from all the past presidents is that this is really for them an amazing opportunity, and that with hindsight, it was one of, if not the best year of their professional career. And for the moment, I think that's also very much my my feeling. So, but there's no specific tips as such that I'm in that I'm integrating in how I am handling the job.
And I guess one of the skills that you're going to have to sort of develop quite keenly is sort of time management, because there's many issues that you've got to kind of address and be on top of as inter president. And obviously, we could spend hours talking about the challenges facing the trademark industry, but I just wanted to touch on a few of the issues that are perhaps kind of most prevalent at the moment. And I guess the first one is one you've already mentioned, which are the European trademark reforms. And INTJ has obviously been very involved in monitoring and inputting into the development of these. But obviously now that the proposals are pretty much in stone, implementation is imminent. I guess the association's role is more about education and outreach and making sure that members know about the changes, what impact they may have, and what they can be doing to prepare themselves. So I wonder if you had any thoughts about how INTJ can approach that kind of communication and what key messages can be given to council.
Well, yes, I mean, you're right. I mean, the key initiatives are about education and outreach. But at the same time, we will also continue to follow the development and really closely monitor the implementation of the reform as it enters into force. So in terms of education and outreach, you know, starting in December of last year, the INTA Bulletin has been running a series of articles analyzing the key provisions of the European trademark reforms. There was also a webinar that was hosted that you can still buy to see on the INTA website, and there's also a couple of videos being produced specifically on the topic.
Great. And one of the provisions that related to sort of really to counterfeiting was with respect to goods in transit, and you know, the final position was that, you know, EU trademark owners are going to be able to prevent the entry of infringing goods and their placements into custom situations, even if the goods aren't intended to be placed in the European market. But the caveat is that they have to, you know, this entitlement effectively lapses when subsequently the declarant or the holder of the goods can prove that the EU trademark owner is not entitled to prohibit the placing of the goods on the market of destination. And I just wanted to get a sense from yourself whether you felt that was kind of the right balance that was struck.
I mean, obviously there really was a need to move away from the status quo, because you know, particularly after the Philips Nokia decision, you know, the EU had become an increasingly exploited transit territory, and there was no real harmonization among the member states on the treatment of counterfeit goods in transit. So I think the final text is a good compromise, and it's certainly one of the key achievements of the trademark reform, and because it will allow trademark owners to seize counterfeit goods in custom situations in the EU under, you know, as you said, under certain defined circumstances. And there was a lot of debate on the transit topic, and there have been various drafts specifically relating to this transit point, and INTA favored the provisions proposed by the European Commission, And because they were very clear and concise, and we thought they were also the most efficient way forward to deal with the fight against trademark counterfeiting. But we also acknowledge that the final text is a good way to sort of appease the concerns on preserving a balance between, on the one hand, the need to stop counterfeit goods in transit, but at the same time also ensuring smooth and legitimate international trade.
Yes, and I guess it's all about getting that balance. I think that's absolutely right. And I guess this brings us to the wider issue of counterfeiting. As someone that works for a big brand and also has this kind of leadership role in Inter, I just wonder if you had a sense of, is it getting easier to tackle illicit trade or is it actually getting harder at the moment? And what's Inter's role going forward?
Well, first of all, in my current job, I'm not directly handling counterfeit products. I have been in my previous job and at Philips Electronics, and that has been a few years ago. So maybe my answer is more driven by what I've seen there. And at that time, certainly, I would say that it has been harder to tackle the issue. One of the obvious reasons is technological improvements, but also online counterfeiting, which I believe continues to expand. And in terms of INTA's role, well, there's a few aspects. I mean, there's the advocacy aspect of what INTA is doing. I mean, INTA has a very clear position on counterfeit. Also, Inter does a lot about consumer awareness through, for instance, its Unreal campaign, and Unreal is now a specific committee, and there's a large number of people involved now in extending the reach of Unreal. But also in terms of education, Inter is doing a lot and is playing an important role. For instance, this year at the annual meeting, there will be a workshop on the Saturday called Anti-Counterfeiting Solutions for Brand Owners. And that's a full-day session by invitation only to in-house practitioners. But next to that, there's also two sessions one on anti-counterfeiting strategies in Southeast Asia and Africa, and one on online enforcement. And then also from this year, INTA will be organizing events with BESCAP on a yearly basis. And that will be a set of regional conferences on selected topics. And for the moment, these are planned in Singapore, coinciding with the Designs Conference there, in South Africa with an INTA seminar, then in Beijing, where INTA will hold its board meeting this September, and one in Brussels in November following another INTA seminar.
So lots of busy activities ahead. And I guess staying with counterfeiting, a sort of a related issue, is plain packaging, and this is quite a big one for the industry. And one of the arguments, as well as the legal arguments that have been made against sort of plain packaging for tobacco products, is the fact that it can make illicit trade more effective. That actually it's easier to counterfeit something that doesn't have branding and doesn't have the related sort of marks on it. Obviously, this year we're going to hopefully get the WTO ruling on challenges to Australia's regime. But it's already spreading to other countries, and I just want to get a sense of whether you felt that brand owners in general terms, I know INTA has been very involved, but brand owners in general terms, particularly those outside the tobacco industry, have really engaged on the issue to date.
Yeah, well, I think a good example to give is in that there, I believe that the engagement is there, is the board resolution, the INTA board resolution on plain and highly standardized packaging. That has been approved by the board, and the board consists of a large number of people from all over the world, from all different industries. So to me, the fact that that resolution passed is a good example that there is engagement also outside of the tobacco industries on this topic, absolutely.
Great. And obviously, INJT International has been quite active in terms of arguing the negatives of plain packaging, and you've got associations like Marks, like Inter, that have also kind of made their sort of position known. But do you feel, the arguments that are being made, whether they're sort of legal or philosophical, that kind of against plain packaging, are really getting a fair hearing, that they're treated dispassionately, or do you feel that, it's harder to get that point across to people?
I think as, in my role as the INTA president, for me, it is important to continue to make the point that plain packaging is not a tobacco issue, but it's a trademark, it's a brand, it's an IP issue.
Yep.
And I think that's an important message to continue to make also, to ensure the engagement that we talked about a minute ago from non-tobacco industries.
Yeah, and you know, this is one of the issues going forward, is this kind of this concern about the spread of plain packaging, that it could go to other industries, whether that's sort of alcohol, soft drinks, food, pharmaceuticals, and the likes. You know, and even over here in the UK in the past week, there's been a lot of discussion in the political arena about sort of a tax on high sugar products. And I just want to get a sense from you that what you felt might be the warning signs, you know, for those that are maybe trying to keep an eye on whether plain packaging, you know, will spread to other goods. Is it things like taxes that need to be kept an eye on, or are there other kind of signs that perhaps plain packaging might be considered?
I think if you look at the sort of the proposals for legislation around the world, you see examples from various industries that implement types of restrictions that are nowadays common to tobacco. So health warnings, pictorial health warnings, indeed taxes, increased taxes, restrictions on marketing, restrictions on sales, restrictions on points of sales. So if your question is how to be mindful of this coming, I would say, you know, look at those sort of trends, because that's how it started in tobacco in the past.
Okay, and moving away from this particular issue and sort of plain packaging and counterfeiting, and I had a couple more kind of areas that I'd just like to briefly touch upon. And one is kind of internet governance, and particularly the ever-growing domain name expansion, and also the IANA transition. And perhaps we can sort of start with the GTLD expansion. I just want to get a sense of what your experience has been of this to date. Whether you sort of see it as a headache for brand owners, or is it an opportunity for brand owners, or perhaps a mix of both?
I mean, it must be a mix of both, because there are some brand owners who are already using their new GTLDs, and there's those who are still struggling to understand whether it's going to be successful and whether they would like to join in as well. And then there are those who are in industries that are very prone to counterfeit, who are just concerned with the proliferation of websites, which can only increase the number of websites that they need to be monitoring for potential counterfeit products.
And in terms of the bigger picture as well, we obviously have the IANA transition going on at the moment, and I think you mentioned in your initial sort of statements that were put out from INTA as you took over the presidency, that this was something that trademark owners really can't ignore. And I wonder if you could just maybe expand upon why brand owners really need to be watching the IANA transition, why it's so important.
Well, I think it is, first of all, you know, any transition really requires key accountability and also security elements to protect the rights holders, so the owners of trademarks, but ultimately also to protect the consumers. And when we're talking about the IANA transition, we are talking about the potential or likely transition to ICANN. And from the GTLD expansion, but also from other topics, there is reason to be critical, in the sense that, you know, in the transition, it's very important that ICANN accountability is really that ICANN is accountable for the process and for how it will be handled after. Because one of the things I think is very important, that is, you know, maintaining the openness of the internet is really key to a smooth functioning of commerce, but also of your enforcement online. And therefore, it's really important that, you know, rights protection mechanisms work correctly. And we have seen, you know, with the GTLD program, that sometimes the rights protection mechanisms have been used, let's say, in a disfavorable way to trademark owners, where some of the trademarks that they registered in the trademark clearinghouse were then sold at a premium. So I think that's the reason why it is very important that people are not concerned is not the word, but that they are involved and aware of what is happening.
And another issue away from the online world, I mean, I know that INTA have been very involved in terms of the creation of impact studies. It's commissioned studies that are going to try and evidence, you know, the positive contribution that trademarks and brands make. And this kind of brings up the kind of the whole issue of respect for IP. And I just wanted to get a sense of whether you felt that at the moment that there is a problem in terms of the perception of intellectual property and the positive role that trademarks make, you know, with the media often sort of maybe focusing on the negatives. You know, is there a job to be done in terms of accentuating the positive?
Yes, I think there is a job to be done. But I also think that the topic as such is not new. actually, I noticed that in 2005 there was a presidential task force, an INTA presidential task force, on what was then called confronting anti-intellectual property views. And I mean, in a sense, it is still here today, the topic. It hasn't gone away. And I think, yes, as trademark owners, we, and certainly also as INTA, we have an obligation to show the positive impact of trademarks on, you know, on economies and on commerce and on consumers. And that's why I think the impact studies, the ones that we've already seen coming out of the US and Europe, for instance, have been so powerful because they put numbers on the positive side of IP.
So I guess the takeaway from that is that you won't be solving this particular challenge in your presidency. It's very much a long-term game.
yeah, the honest answer is yes. Yeah. Probably yes.
I mean, it's very clear to me that, you know, you've got a lot to do over the next 12 months. You know, you've got sort of, you know, you work with INTA. There's going to be sort of a lot of travel involved in that. You're going to be kind of advocating on many different issues, and all this is really on top of your day job. So you've got a pretty hefty workload, and I guess, you know, in terms of your background, you know, it's been quite varied in industry focus. So I guess that's become quite a useful asset because it enables you to kind of, you know, see issues from very different perspectives. But I wonder if we could sort of maybe sort of briefly run through your career to date, just to get a sense of sort of how you've come to where you are today. And I believe your first role after law school was at KPM, a telecoms company. And I wonder if you could just talk us from there, really, up to the present day.
Yeah, sure. So KPN, a Dutch telecommunication company, I believe at the time the largest trademark owner in the Benelux. And that was really the starting of the proper start of my career. And it was also the job where I took training to become a trademark attorney, and after 5 years in the job, I got a call from a headhunter to join another company in the Netherlands, and they couldn't tell me how, but it was fairly obvious that it was actually Unilever who I then joined. I spent 8 years at Unilever, mostly in Rotterdam, and I was also very often in London. And I handled various portfolios, both on the foods side and also on the home and personal care side. And that 8 years were really, the forming part of my career. But at the end of that 8 years, I was really interested in sort of broadening my scope. I think, and I said this before, so I'll probably repeat myself, but in a company, there's always a certain range of IP issues that you are exposed to. And although companies the size of Unilever provide so many opportunities and so many options and so many, and such a broad range of IP issues, I still felt that I could be exposed to more, and that's why I moved to Philips Electronics, also in the Netherlands. And there I really, that was a company that is a company that's very much focused on technology, on patents and trademarks and brands, were certainly, let's say, less, not regarded less, but I mean, there were less brands. It was less marketing driven. It was more technology driven. And what I learned there is really to, first of all, to work very project-based, which was very interesting, but also they were very open to licensing the technology because they'd invented the DVD and the CD or were co-inventors. So they had a very very advanced and very professional licensing system set up. So that really gave me the exposure to seeing IP also as the basis for a licensing structure. And then indeed, a couple of years ago, I was approached to join JTI, a tobacco company based in Switzerland. So there it was the combination, again, of broadening my scope of IP issues. It was also the international experience that I was interested in. And also it was a great opportunity to start managing a team.
Oh, that's great. As I said previously, I guess that, you know, the varied background will really help you sort of see IP from every different perspective, which can only kind of be a beneficial sort of tool in your current role as president. And I guess as a final question, you know, you're now embarking on a presidency. I guess, you know, there will be lots going on between now and May, but the INTA annual meeting is fast approaching. Registration is open. I saw a tweet today from INTA sort of saying that they've passed 4,000 registrants. I've already started receiving meeting requests, so it's obviously looming heavily. For those that haven't booked their place yet, I mean, what are the messages you would give to them about, you know, why they should make sure they are in Orlando in May?
Well, I mean, for those who have been, I think they will find what they are, what they've always found. It's the networking opportunities, it's the various events, it's the excursions, it's the great number of educational sessions. It's the there's more than 200 table topics. So there really is a lot. I also mentioned the dedicated anti-counterfeiting day, which is on the Saturday, which is new. For people who have never been to the annual meeting and are considering going to the annual meeting, I would say that you know, one of the key reasons really to go, and it ties in a little bit with what I mentioned before about sort of the relevance or the you know, being involved in INTA, this is the opportunity to meet the people maybe that you work with if you're on a committee, but it's certainly an opportunity to meet many other people, you know, sort of more people who've been in the business for a long time and that you can learn a lot from by talking to them or having meetings with them. So it's really a sort of an all-round event. It covers educational, it covers networking opportunities, and of course we're going to have a nice grand finale and hopefully a grand opening ceremony.
Excellent. I'm looking forward to it. Well, thanks for that, Ronald. That's been a really good sort of quick sort of run through, I guess, of, sort of some of the main issues. And I guess at this stage, you know, all we can do is sort of wish you well on the presidency, and sort of, I guess, be glad that we haven't got as busy a year ahead as you do.
Thanks very much.
And with that, we left Ronald to tackle what is a considerable workload ahead, as he juggles the duties related to his 9-to-5 job and those required of the INTA president. We will try to catch up with him in Orlando in May, but we will no doubt be returning in the meantime to some of the issues we discussed today. And we'll be back with another podcast soon, so if you have any suggestions for topics we should cover, please email us at podcast@worldtrademarkreview.com. In the meantime, you can also access the latest trademark news and views at worldtrademarkreview.com, or follow us on Twitter at WTR Magazine. Until next time.
This has been the World Trademark Review podcast. Don't forget to subscribe and be sure to follow us on Twitter, LinkedIn, or Facebook for the latest news and updates. Thanks for listening.